Our tale resumes on the high seas, as Ash and Pikachu finally catch sight of the Sinnoh region, which has seemingly risen above the waves to meet them. Excitedly, Ash asks his buddy if he's ready to start their brand new adventure, with the rodents squeaking just as eagerly in the affirmative. Beside them, the more level-headed voice of Gary Oak chides that before they can go running off, their first stop has to be Professor Rowan's Pokemon lab, so he can check in with his mentor. Deflating a little, Ash accepts this, though when the two boys step foot in the lab about half an hour later, his spirits are reinvigorated by the sight of three Pokemon he's never seen before. Running over to them, Ash beams that they're so cool, with a blustery male voice stating their names are Turtwig, Piplup, and Chimchar, before asking who the boy is, since if his memory serves, the new trainer who is meant to be visiting the lab today is a girl. Apologetically, Gary explains that this is the friend he was telling the man about, introducing Ash to Professor Rowan and vice versa. Noting approvingly, Rowan comments that he now understands what Gary meant when he said his companion was excitable, but loved Pokemon deeply, before thanking them both for meeting him here, since as he said, he is awaiting the arrival of a new trainer, and so cannot venture too far afield. Shrugging, Gary assures the professor that it's not a problem, while Ash nods as well, saying he's just glad he got to meet these awesome new Pokemon. Smiling with his eyes, Rowan expresses gratitude all the same, telling Gary that because of his lack of mobility, he needs him to do something for him, with the young oak asking what his boss needs. Nodding once more at the readiness with which his protege accepted the task, Rowan explains that he needs Gary to transport four recently acquired armor fossils to the Ouroboros Mining Museum so they can be revived. Grinning, Gary tells the professor to consider it done, with Rowan's assistant handing the boy a case, presumably containing the fossils. Curiously, Ash asks if this Ouroboros place has a gym, to which Rowan informs him that it does in fact have one, with Rourke being a common first opponent if Ash intends to take on the Sinnoh League challenge. Beaming, Ash replies that in that case, he'll tag along with Gary for a while, causing Gary to half-laugh, half-sigh that he shouldn't have expected anything else from Ashy Boy. However, before more can be said on the matter, something else occurs that Gary should have anticipated thanks to Ash's presence, with that being the arrival of Team Rocket. Despite having a new motto, the Crooked Trio are still up to their old tricks, their eyes this time on the trio of Sinnoh starters, as well as that shiny-looking case containing the fossils. Growling that there's no chance he'll let Team Rocket steal any of that, Ash tells Pikachu to send these three blasting off, while besides him, Gary brings out his Electivire. Together, the two electric types then join forces, and before Jesse, James, or Meowth can respond, they are sent soaring into the sky, leaving only a faint glint in their wake. When they are gone, Rowan thanks the boys, saying he's even further in their debt. Though with a laugh, Ash tells him not to sweat it, or more professionally, Gary calls it just part of the job. The two trainers then set off, missing Dawn due to having arrived before her, though soon coming across another young man, one with purple hair who is seemingly scanning a trio of bird Pokemon with his Pokedex. He then tells two of them to get lost, releasing them while recalling his chosen specimen. Frowning at this cold treatment of his Pokemon, Ash asks the boy what he thinks he's doing, with the stranger answering that he's seeing which Starly is the most viable, since by doing that now, he'll save himself from wasting time on a loser. Definitely annoyed now, Ash retorts that the only loser is the purple-haired boy, if he thinks of Pokemon that way, adding that he knows any Pokemon can be great with a little love and hard work, scratching Pikachu behind the ear as he says it. Scoffing, the other boy tells Ash to prove it, suggesting a best out of three battle, to which Ash is able to accept in this timeline, having a full team of six at his disposal. Volunteering to referee, Gary takes his place equidistant from the other boys, while as one they each bring out their first Pokemon, Pikachu for Ash, and Elekid for the stranger who on Gary's prompting introduces himself as Paul. Wanting to prove his ideology correct, Ash takes the first move, having Pikachu open with a Thunderbolt, though to his shock and horror, Elekid dissipates this hit by spinning its arms and absorbing the electrical current into itself. Scoffing that this attempt was pathetic, Paul then counters with Thunder, using Pikachu's own power against him, though as Paul will soon see, electricity is not the only area in which Pikachu shines, with the mouse using agility to dodge the incoming bolt, before zeroing on an Elekid with Quick Attack. Letting out a buzzing squeal, the spunky spark plug is sent skidding backwards, though refusing to give an inch, it quickly re-enters the fray on Paul's command, uppercutting Pikachu with a Brick Break, before following up with a Thunder Punch to assert dominance. However, no amount of damage is likely to cow Ash and Pikachu, with the electric rodent simply using this close proximity to fire off a point-blank Thunderbolt which scorches Elekid. He then attempts to shoulder barge his foe, though this time Paul is ready, calling for the Protect to shield Elekid from the damage, and send Pikachu bouncing back. This leaves the mouse Pokemon vulnerable, and as Ash is about to learn, Paul does not want to leave an opportunity unseized, with him commanding his electric type to use Thunder again, this time to great effect. Worriedly, Ash asks Pikachu if he's okay, though giving his partner a resolute nod, Pikachu returns to all fours, ready to hit the ground running, quite literally. Recognizing this, Ash calls for a quick attack, and as Pikachu takes off, Paul orders Elekid to counter with Brick Break. Smirking confidently, Elekid thrusts his hand out to punch Pikachu's face. Though demonstrating feats of speed far greater than its fellow electric type, Pikachu avoids the jab, before coming in to strike Elekid in the side, sending it skyward, so that when it comes crashing back down to the ground, it is with spirals for eyes, resulting in the declaration that it's unable to battle. Scowling, Paul recalls his electric type, but with a wide grin, Ash does likewise so they can be in their second match. For this battle, Paul decides to go with a Chimchar like the one Ash saw at Professor Rowan's lab, while Ash himself chooses Larvitar, much to the rock skin Pokemon's delight. This time it is Paul who takes the first move, and playing smart, he calls for a super effective dig, though to his dismay, when Chimchar begins burrowing underground, Larvitar matches it, with this proving most unfortunate for the Fire Monkey, who cannot match Larvitar in its natural element. As a result, when the pair collide, Chimchar is sent rocketing out of its hole, with Larvitar popping up a few moments later to strike the simian with a hidden power. To Chimchar's credit, it handles the move much better than Team Rocket did when first struck by it, though all the same, Paul seems dissatisfied, sneering at his fire type to get up, and belittling it when it does not follow his order immediately. Angrily, Ash yells at Paul to knock it off, though bluntly, the purple-haired boy tells his opponent to butt out, snapping at Chimchar once more, with this driving it back to its feet. He then calls for a flame wheel, though this is easily countered by a harden from Larvitar, who seems to take next to no damage from the attack, before retaliating with a bite that makes Chimchar shriek as its forearm is caught in the rock type's jaw. Desperately, the Fire Monkey attempts to use Scratch to force Larvitar to let go, but this is just as ineffective as the flame wheel was, with Larvitar only relenting when Ash tells it to spin in a circle and throw Chimchar. Landing hard with a pained squeal, Chimchar struggles to rise back to its feet, though through sheer determination not to let down its trainer, it manages, impressing Ash while Paul only watches on coldly. Then, when the fire type is standing, it makes one last desperate bid with Ember, though this proves largely fruitless, as when Larvitar counters with hidden power, the move of unclear typing blows the flaming shards away, striking Chimchar head-on and dropping it. And just like that, the battle is over, since with Ash having won two out of the three battles, there is no need for a third. Seething, Paul tells Chimchar that this is all its fault, as he goes to recall it, though to his surprise, when the red light of its Pokeball shoots out, Larvitar intercepts it, stopping the return as it barks furiously up at Paul. Though Ash cannot speak Larvitar's language, he knows it well enough to understand that this is a rebuke of the boy's treatment of Chimchar, having suffered enough cruelty at the hands of humans to want to protect all other Pokemon from experiencing the same pain, be they ally or opponent. Grinning, Ash encourages Larvitar to give Paul what for, though scowl only deepening, the purple-haired boy warns Ash to get the rock type out of his way right now or else, with Gary reluctantly agreeing that Chimchar should be returned to its ball to rest. Acknowledging this is for Chimchar's own good, Larvitar returns to Ash, though not before giving its vanquished foe a friendly pat on the back. When the rock skin Pokemon is reunited with its trainer, it is thrown into the air and wrapped in a hug, with Ash thanking it for putting up such a great fight, a far cry from Chimchar's reception, as it is wordlessly put back in its ball. All the same, Paul cannot resist a snide parting comment, stating that he chalks Ash's victory up to type advantage more than skill. Flaring up, Ash goes to retort, though stepping between the other boys, Gary cuts his companion off, saying that Paul reminds him of himself back when he was an arrogant jerk. He then gives the purple-haired boy some free advice, saying that if Paul wants to get stronger, he should try and learn from his rivals rather than belittling them, especially when they've just beaten him, since if Ash is nothing special like Paul claims, then how mediocre must Paul himself be? It seems Paul has no retort for this, and so simply departs, leaving Ash to celebrate his victory, and Gary to stare at the place where the grumpy youth just was, hoping he'll find his way without the sort of painful wake-up call he had to go through to deflate his oversized head. After this, Ash and Gary get back on the road, with the events of Dawn of a New Era playing out a bit differently, as when the boys meet Nando and hear his plight about whether to take gyms or contests, they can only recommend gyms, having never partaken in Pokemon contests. As a result, Nando decides to exclusively take the gym challenge, even going so far as to have a quick battle with Ash in the style of a gym, before bidding the boys farewell. Likewise, the events of getting Twiggy with it are entirely prevented, thanks to the presence of Skarmory on Ash's team. Due to its experience both as a skilled flyer and someone who has battled Team Rocket multiple times, it is able to rescue Pikachu without bursting the balloon, meaning Ash never meets Turtwig, and adds it to his team. This lack of delays also means different strokes for different blokes, and like it or lop it are skipped, while Jimbalaya plays out more or less like canon, except Gary replaces Brock, with him catching Krogunk at the end of the episode. The next major event takes place while the boys have stopped for a quick lunch break, as during their meal, Gary notices something moving in the nearby bushes, specifically in the vicinity of where Pikachu is seated. Wanting to get a closer look, he and Ash approach the rustling bush, only for Gary to be met by a surprise dizzy punch to the chin, while Ash is frozen solid by a follow-up ice beam, thanks to the hidden Pokemon being startled by their joint approach. On closer inspection, the pair see that it's a small rabbit Pokemon, which Ash learns from his Pokedex is called Beniri, once Gary's Arcanine thaws him out. Despite its incredible power, Beniri remains shy, hanging back now that it has put a stop to its perceived threat. rabbit, though its eyes remain fixed on Pikachu. Giving the rabbit an encouraging smile, Ash invites it to come eat and play with them, an offer Buniri is happy to accept, bouncing over and squeezing in between Pikachu and Larvitar. After the meal, Ash and Gary watch as their Pokemon play with Buniri, with Ash being only further impressed by its speed and strength, and going so far as to declare he will catch it. With no Dawn to call dibs, Ash goes unopposed in this idea, with Gary even commenting that he suspects Buniri would be eager to join them, since it's clearly a she, and she clearly has a massive crush on Pikachu. Obliviously, Ash asks if his old rival really thinks so, causing Gary to chuckle that Ashy Boy never changes, before telling him to trust him on this one. Good to Gary's word, when Ash offers Buniri a place on his team, she is all too happy to accept, resulting in Ash making his first Sinnoh capture without even needing to battle. Wanting to get a chance to familiarize himself with Buniri before the first gym, Ash uses the little white button on his Pokédex to change which Pokémon will be sent to Oak's lab, sending Skarmory back instead, since with all its personal growth since last time he sent it there, he is confident it will be able to integrate itself into lab life, and even keep up its training with Noctowl and Pidgeot. From here, things more or less progress as they do in canon, until the boys reach Ouroboros, with the main exception being that their stay in Jubilife is much shorter, since neither of them has any business in the city, and Ash is eager to have his first Sinnoh gym battle. As a result, Ash makes it to the gym before Paul, meaning it's the purple-haired boy who has to watch and wait his turn, along with Gary, who is curious to see how his former rival handles a gym battle now that he is a league winner. Thankfully, it seems that Ash's experience has given him a more sensible approach, as when Rock reveals his Geodude, Ash responds with Heracross. What follows is a fairly short battle, as Heracross's type advantage and long history with Ash gives it more than enough power to overcome Geodude, causing Ash to worry that maybe he's too strong for this gym. However, this is proved false almost immediately when Rock brings out his Onix, as with speed and power, the Rock Serpent proves itself a real challenge for Heracross, striking it with Slam and causing it to holler in pain. Nonetheless, it will take more than this to defeat the Battle Beetle, with Ash giving it a thumbs up as it rushes in to strike Onix with Focus Punch. Now having a gauge for each other's power, the two Pokemon square off, fierce determination in both their eyes as they lunge at one another, with Megahorn clashing against Onix's Rocky Horn as it uses Double Edge. Despite the massive size difference between them, both Pokemon stand as titans in that moment, and when they are ultimately forced back, it is as proud equals. Though as it goes, Onix leaves Heracross with a parting gift in the form of a Screech, which lowers its defense and makes the prospect of another physical clash a highly dangerous one for the bug fighter. Nonetheless, Ash and Heracross's pride will not allow them to back down, with Ash commanding his friend to charge up Focus Punches in both hands, while also preparing a Megahorn for a quite literal three-pronged attack. As he does this, Rock has Onix begin slithering in a figure eight, building up speed and momentum for the clash to come, with the knowledge that when these two Goliaths of the battlefield meet, one of them will not be getting back up afterwards. Finally, when both Pokemon are ready, they begin their onslaught, with Heracross taking to the air in a flurry of buzzing wings, while Onix dives through the ground like it were water, before coming back up and breaching with enough speed to take flight as well. Up above, Heracross performs an aerial backflip that allows it to maintain its speed as it descends towards its foe, fists and horn glowing. A moment later, the pair make impact, with a sonic boom ripping out from the place they collided, nearly blowing Ash and Rock off their feet, while in the stands, Paul and Gary's hair whip in a testament to the incredible force of the clash. Then as one, the two combatants fall, striking the ground and leaving a dust cloud in their wake. However, when the dust settles, only one of them is able to rise, and that is Onix, though it now bears a nasty-looking crack on its forehead as a token of its duel with Heracross. As for Heracross, it sadly could not withstand a clash with a rocky freight train in its condition, and so despite all its tenacity, now lies unconscious, forcing Ash to choose his second Pokemon. To the bewilderment of everyone, the young Kantonian decides to face the Stone Goliath with his newest catch, Buniri, a seemingly ludicrous decision, considering Onix's ability to resist normal-type moves. That is until Ash tells her to use that powerful Ice Beam that she used against him, at which point everything makes sense, as a jet of Arctic energy strikes Onix right on the crack Heracross left, causing it to bellow in pain. Pressing this advantage, Ash's Buniri repeat the attack, but being a clever trainer, Rock has Onix dodge before telling it to swipe Buniri with its tail. However, here too Ash is a counter, telling his fairy friend to use Bounce to avoid the sweep, then to blast Onix with Ice Beam again. This is surprisingly effective, with Ash and Buniri repeating their hit-and-run acrobatics several times, all to great avail. Even Rock cannot help but be impressed, asking Ash where he learned to fight like that, with the boy replying that he actually picked it up from a friend in Hoenn named Tyson. Commending this, the gym leader promises to be just as creative in his counter, having Onix tunnel like it did before the final clash with Heracross, though this time, it does not immediately spring up, causing Ash and Buniri to panic a little, as they have no way of knowing when or where Onix will appear next. This psychological warfare proves to be just the leverage Rock needs, them capitalizing on the uncertainty to strike Buniri from directly below, sending her tumbling head over heels into the air with a yell, as Onix follows just behind. A moment later, Onyx's rocky jaws clamp shut around Buniri, trapping her in place and causing the terrified Yell to become a pained scream. Briefly, Ash considers recalling her for her own well-being, but it seems the rabbit Pokemon is more resourceful than her trainer had given her credit for, as without hesitation, Buniri unleashes another ice beam, this one far more erratic due to the pain she's in, though also more potent, so that a moment later, Onyx feels its whole body become coated in a layer of ice that freezes it solid. In its frozen state, Onyx stops putting its attention into biting, allowing Buniri to at last wriggle free. Then, after looking over to Pikachu in the stands as if urging him to watch this cool thing she's about to do, she uses Bounce to leap into the air and come back down in a cannonball dive. This strikes not only the ice, but also the crack created by Heracross, resulting in the ice shattering and Onyx letting out a bellow of pain from this compounded damage. However, this is not the only thing Onyx does, as it also begins to collapse, boulder after boulder striking the ground, until the rock serpent soon finds itself prone, having been bested by the combined efforts of Heracross and Buniri, one building off the other in an act of unseen teamwork that proved capable of felling a giant. Returning Onyx with his thanks, Rock reveals his last Pokemon to be Kranidos, while Ash also decides to call back Buniri, feeling she's more than earned a rest after that spectacular battle. In her place, he brings out Meganium, who proudly struts onto the field, eager to battle alongside Ash again after seeing relatively little action during the battle frontier. Catching sight of her opponent, the haughty herb Pokemon flicks her head dismissively, while across from her, Kranidos begins counting its steps, evidently ready to charge. When the call is given, both Kranidos and Meganium rush at each other, body slam meeting Zen Headbutt in the center of the field. Though to Ash's dismay, Kranidos wins the first exchange, its psychic-type move repelling Meganium and causing Rock to cheer encouragingly. Nonetheless, Meganium remains resolute, refusing to allow her Sinnoh debut to end in anything other than triumph, and so in Ash's command, she lets loose a Petal Dance, which by all accounts should be super effective. However, here too Rock has a counter, revealing that Kranidos knows Flamethrower, having been taught the move specifically to deal with grass types. This quickly proves a highly effective solution, as Meganium's petals are immolated long before they can touch the Headbutt Pokemon, while she is also roasted, letting out a screech of pain. However, this is not enough to stop Meganium, and when Ash calls her the best, she feels as if she could do anything, using her newly acquired Euphoria to spring into the air with her vines, then pepper Kranidos with a second volley of petals. Due to the surprising nature of this move, Rock and Kranidos are unprepared to counter it, resulting in the super effective hit landing and causing Kranidos to groan as Meganium touches down behind it. She then turns to face her foe, a steeliness to her eyes as she cries a challenge, informing Kranidos this duel of dinosaurs is far from over. Meeting her challenge head-on, rather literally in fact, Kranidos goes for another Zen Headbutt, though this time Ash has a plan, telling his grass star to sweep the Headbutt Pokemon's feet with her vines, a clear adaptation of how Rock attempted to deal with Buniri initially. However, unlike with Rock, this works, causing Kranidos to trip and stumble headfirst into one of the rocks lining the battlefield, as from the other side of the field, the gym leader commends Ash's creativity in using his own move against him. Even Paul can't help but be slightly impressed, wondering if that's what Gary was talking about when he told him to learn from his rivals. Back on the battlefield, Ash attempts to keep his momentum going, having Meganium blast Kranidos with another Petal Dance while it's incapacitated, much of the hard-headed dino's consternation. However, refusing to give up, Kranidos soon regains its footing, before coming in for another charge, which Meganium once again tries to cancel out by having her vines serve as a makeshift tripwire. Unfortunately, this is just what Rock and Kranidos had hoped Ash would call for, and so showing off the strength of their own bond, the young gym leader has his friend leap over the vine at the very last second, catching Meganium off guard, and allowing the rock type to slam its platy skull into a windpipe. Skidding back, Meganium uses her vines to anchor herself, and it's good that she does, as she needs something to keep her up when she is bathed with the second super effective flamethrower, this one hotter than the last, due to not needing to waste energy burning up petals first. In the aftermath of the onslaught, the herb Pokemon doesn't look so good, though this is not entirely bad news, as with her injuries come power, in the form of overgrow, with a green aura soon beginning to glow around her. Knowing it will be now or never, Ash tells her to use Petal Dance again, and this time when it clashes against Flamethrower, the victory goes to Flower Power, with the pink petals blowing away the flames and scooping Kranidos in a vortex of blossoms. Desperately, Rock attempts to help Kranidos escape, though it seems it is already too late, as with a determined cry, Meganium follows her foe into the tornado, riding the flowery updraft in a much more graceful manner than Kranidos, all the while building up speed, so that when it reunites with the rock type in the air, it's to deliver a speedy and powerful body slam. This does at least free Kranidos from the Petal Dance's hold, though in its place, the Headbutt Pokemon is met with the harsh embrace of ceiling tiles, as it soon finds itself flung into the roof, with enough force to make a crater. Naturally, this is also enough to knock it out, and so when Rock recalls his friend before it can make the painful plummet back to Earth, the referee declares Ash the winner of the gym battle. Meeting in the middle, Ash and Rock then shake hands, with the glasses-clad foreman bestowing Ash with a coal badge as a testament to his victory here at the Oroberg Gym. Grinning broadly, Ash flashes his new badge, showing it first to Meganium, and then Gary, Pikachu, and Paul up in the stands. Speaking of Gary, this battle with the fossil Pokemon has made him only more eager to get Professor Rowan's fossils revived, with him telling Ash of his intent as well as making plans to meet up later at the Pokemon Center, since he imagines his old rival would rather watch Paul's battle than stand around with him waiting for the prehistoric Pokemon to be restored to life. Taking him up on this offer, Ash decides to stick around and watch Paul's battle, which gets underway as soon as Rock can get his team healed up and back in fighting shape. During the battle, Ash pays close attention to Paul's battling style, finding him to be analytical and strategic like Gary, while also adaptive and aggressive like himself, making for a captivating viewing experience. All in all, the match goes much like in canon, with Paul claiming victory thanks to Elekid's Brick Break, though even still he seems disgruntled in the knowledge that Ash beat him to the punch here, just like he beat him in their battle. To this end, he leaves the gym without even looking in his new rival's direction, and having no desire to swap pleasantries with the Brusque boy either, Ash seeks out Gary at the Mining Museum, finding him there, now accompanied by four Pokemon, who Gary introduces his shield on. Now that this task is complete, Gary wastes no time in contacting Professor Rowan back at the Pokemon Center, while Ash and Pikachu entertain the shield on. From the tone of his voice, Rowan is surprised to hear from his assistant so soon, with him even explaining he had not expected him to reach Oroberg City yet, and so had not yet finished setting up the nature preserve that Gary is meant to take the shield on too. Curiously, Gary asks what the professor wants him to do then, with Rowan instructing the boy to stay on the move until he contacts him, since he's heard rumor of a Pokemon hunter, known only by the codename Jay, who wants to steal the four shield on and auction them off to the highest bidder. Having overheard this, Ash joins the conversation at last, calling that sort of thinking despicable and promising to watch Gary and the shield on's backs. Nodding approvingly, Rowan states that he truly is in Ash's debt now, vowing that he will find a way to repay him for all his help, before reminding the two boys to remain vigilant as he ends the call. Now that they have their instructions, the only question is where Ash and Gary should go next. Thankfully, Nurse Joy is happy to provide suggestions, giving Ash the location of the other gyms, with the closest being Eterna City. This also works for Gary, since it isn't too far from the nature preserve he will eventually have to escort the shield onto, meaning should Professor Rowan call, he won't have to go too far out of his way. With this settled, the two friends and former rivals then set off, choosing to take the long way round, since the shorter path is a cycling road, which would be difficult to transport four wild shield on across. This requires doubling back towards Jubilife, and indirectly putting them on a collision course with the very person they are seeking to avoid, as a few days into their trip, Ash and Gary witness a woman on a salamander stealing a Gardevoir from its trainer, through the use of a strange device that seemingly turns Pokemon into bronze statues. Unable to abide such evil, Ash and Gary both want to help rescue Gardevoir, though at the same time, they cannot risk bringing the shield on directly to Jay. Thankfully, the duo find allies in the strangest place, with that being Jesse and James, who also want Jay stopped after she makes off with Meowth. Figuring that the enemy of their enemy is their friend, the boys entrust the shield on to the pair of Team Rocket operatives, promising to get Meowth back for them in return, as they board Jay's airship just as it's about to take off. Figuring the best use of their time is to divide and conquer, Gary volunteers to track down the stolen Pokemon while Ash agrees to act as a diversion, having Pikachu and all his other Pokemon cause havoc as they make their way to the bridge, where Jay will no doubt be waiting for them. This enclosed space winds up working to the hero's advantage, as it is too small for Jay to unleash her Salamence, meaning she has to rely on her Ariados instead. And while Pikachu is happy to step up and battle the bug, Larvitar evidently wants it more, its hatred of Pokemon hunters lighting a fire in its belly. Seeing this passion, Ash tells his little green buddy to use Hidden Power, with the move dealing super effective damage to Ariados, while Jay watches appraisingly, commenting that based on what she's seeing, Larvitar's hidden power typing must either be Rock, Fire, Flying, or Psychic, and if it's any of the latter three, she might be able to fetch a decent price for the unevolved pseudo-legendary on the black market. Coldly, Ash calls Jay pure evil, but in an unflappable way, Jay simply tells him to be silent, ordering Ariados to use String Shot to bind the boy in his Pokemon. However, before the poison bug can do any such thing, the lights and controls all go haywire, with one of Jay's crew gasping that something must be overloading their generator. Spotting the smile on Ash's face, the Pokemon hunter correctly surmises the boy must have an accomplice, before commanding her subordinates to abandon ship, her voice stoic, aside from the slightest hint of fury, as she states that no payday is worth getting arrested over. She then has Ariados destroy the bridge's windshield instead, leaping out and making her escape on Salamence, while her crew do likewise with their own flying Pokemon. Having sent Skarmory back to Professor Oak's, Ash has no flyer of his own to give chase, and so instead attempts to find a safe place to ride out the imminent crash landing. Having similar thoughts, his Pokemon follow suit, that is aside from Larvitar, who has to be dragged to safety by Pikachu, as its eyes are still locked on Jay's retreating figure, clear dissatisfaction with how this encounter ended, etched in every line of its face. A moment later, the flying fortress makes landfall, though thanks to being braced, no one is seriously hurt. Heading back the way they came to rendezvous with Gary, Ash and his Pokemon are pleased to see that he has already freed all the captives from stasis, with Meowth quipping that after the day he's had, even the twerps are sight for sore eyes. Not long after, after, the boys are joined by Officer Jenny and a squad of police who recognize Jay's aircraft, and after being filled in on the details, commend Ash and Gary for their heroism, while promising to reunite all the stolen Pokemon with their trainers. Speaking of reunions, there is one that the heroes see to personally, with that being Team Rocket's, as Jesse and James wrap Meowth in a hug, while the boys collect the shield on and return to the road. When Ash and Gary are gone, and the trio have filled each other in on the day's events from their respective points of view, Meowth questions why his compatriots didn't steal the Twerp shield-ons while they were busy rescuing him. Looking contemplative, James admits that the thought didn't even cross his mind. While in a dismissive tone, Jesse retorts that if they'd run off with a fossil Pokemon, they wouldn't have been able to be here to reunite with their furry friend. And really, what are a couple of rare Pokemon compared to Meowth? After all, he's one of them. Meanwhile, Ash and Gary are back on their way, now more vigilant than ever thanks to their running with Hunter J. Wanting to avoid another, Gary insists they stay off main roads and out of cities until they reach Eterna, skipping their return to Jubilife entirely, and only stopping in at out-of-the-way Pokemon centers long enough to rest, eat, and get their Pokemon treated for any minor injuries they may have acquired during training. As a result, they avoid most significant encounters. That is until one morning when a pair of men come sprinting into the Pokemon center they'd been spending the night at, just as they are preparing to leave. Seeing the injured Zangoose and Bellsprout in their arms, as well as their harried expressions, Gary asks what happened, with the Zangoose trainer explaining that a brutal Buizel has taken up residence in a nearby lake, and that it attacked them for entering its territory uninvited. Despite the severity of the two defeated Pokemon's wounds, Ash can't help but get excited, declaring he's gonna catch that Buizel, and herring off at once with Gary and the shield on giving chase behind him. Due to having to shepherd the fossil Pokemon, it takes Gary a bit longer to reach the lake, with Ash and Pikachu already being engaged in battle with Buizel. To the young oak's surprise, the water type seems to be keeping up with Pikachu in terms of power, using its twin tails to unleash sonic booms, which do a fair amount of damage, as well as aqua jets that allow it to outspeed the mouse. Nonetheless, Ash and Pikachu are far too gutsy to go down without a fight, and so using Buizel's moves to their advantage, they wait until he's using Aqua Jet again to let loose a fearsome thunder. Thanks to all the water in the air from Buizel zipping around, this is an easy time finding its mark, and with Buizel being entirely encased in water, the electric attack is all the more devastating, taking the orange aquatic Weasel out in one go. This also allows Ash to lob a Pokeball, which strikes true, and with Buizel in its dazed state, it cannot fight back, making the water type into Ash's second Sinnoh team member. However, this is not the only fateful encounter, as when Ash and Gary return to the Pokemon Center so Ash can bring Buizel into his party, they see the rerun of a Champion League battle between the Sinnoh champion Cynthia and Lucian of the Elite Four on the TV. Captivated by their technique, and thinking back fondly on his own short-lived Champion League run, Ash almost misses it, when Lucian himself strolls up to stand beside him and watch the battle. When the match is over, with Cynthia emerging victorious, Lucian asks the boys what they thought of his performance, with them both being effusive in their praise. Smiling, Lucian thanks them, before briefly scrutinizing Ash, as he states that he feels like he's seen him somewhere before. Perhaps a little tactlessly, Ash suggests that maybe he saw his Champion League battle against Sydney a while back, though instead of being put off, Lucian's smile only grows as he nods this must be it. He then reaches out a hand to shake both Ash and Gary's, introducing himself formally, as well as getting their names. Then, when he has them, he makes the most unexpected but undeniably welcome request of Ash. Would he honor him with a battle? And that's where we'll leave things. What Pokemon will Lucian use in his battle with Ash? Can our young hero finally get a win over an active member of the Elite Four? And will such a high-profile battle impact his and Gary's plan to hide the Shieldon from the sinister clutches of Hunter J? Find out as the journey continues.